You're with SBS Radio. Find more great stories in your language at sbs.com.au.
One in three of our Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander bubs experience ear and hearing troubles that can make it hard for them to listen, learn, and talk to others. Hearing Australia's Happy program offers free, safe, and simple hearing checks for kids under six or not yet attending full-time school. Give your kids happy ears today. Call Hearing Australia on 134 432 or visit hearing.com.au today.
Wadamoli, this is NITV Radio, and I'm Kerry Lee Harding. And coming up for you now, our regular science and technology segment with Sharka Pekova in conversation with Wiradjuri woman and journalist Ray Johnston.
I think we all noticed this a little bit anecdotally. You know, we had the whole nature is healing thing happening where we were noticing animals and plants and the sky was a lot clearer. But the first wave of results of studies from that period of time just after COVID-19 restrictions came in, those results are coming back now. And this particular research team, which included both Australian and international researchers, they found that travel in Japan decreased by 58% in the first 18 days of COVID-19 restrictions. And as a result of that, the atmosphere became much clearer and there was less radiation falling on vegetation, on all the plants. So as a result, they say, the spring, it arrived 8 days earlier, and the vegetation was almost 18% greener than in the previous 5 years, which I do find it amusing that they were able to measure the percentage of how much that vegetation was actually greener.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. And were there any other positive effects?
Yeah, well, they say that this brighter, earlier, greener spring in 2020, it shows that short-term changes in human activity can have really fast ecological impacts. You know, that's a very short period of time for there to be a quite significant change like that. So I think if anything, we're learning that even as individuals, we can have an impact on the planet. I know that when we look at the big polluters and, you know, the big companies that are causing a lot of damage to this planet can feel really overwhelming. So I think if we can take something positive out of this study, it's that we can make individual choices, such as not traveling unless we absolutely have to, that will have an impact and make a difference on our planet into the future.
That brings us to our next topic. The global warming of only 1.5 degrees Celsius may mean extreme sea level events occur every year rather than every century. Which areas will be most affected by the rising sea levels?
Yeah, this is a really interesting study, I think. And it was a team of international scientists, including an Australian as well. And they've been looking at their computer modelling, and look, it says that even if we limit global warming to 1.5 degrees, that those extreme sea level events that are triggered by a combination of storm surges and tides and waves that are currently expected to hit roughly every century, they're normally happening, they may end up happening every single year by the end of the 21st century. And that will be happening in around half of the 7,000 coastal areas that they studied. So this isn't really isolated to one particular area. It's really going to be something that impacts worldwide. And the scientists have pinpointed areas that are most vulnerable, and they are in the tropics. We're already seeing a lot of vulnerable communities in those areas at the moment. While some areas on the northern side of the planet, of the globe, you know, they might not face increases in the frequency of these kind of events, even if global warming reached 5 degrees Celsius. So some parts of the globe will be impacted really dramatically, and others won't even see the effects of it at all.
What would it mean actually for those impacted communities?
It's difficult to quantify exactly what it would mean. We have people even now losing their homes. We have even in our own Torres Strait Islands, you know, people facing losing their home and their culture and their ancestral land. It's a huge impact. We're going to end up with a lot of climate refugees in the future, and that's even in the near future, in the next 10 years. So having these kind of events happen more frequently will just mean those vulnerable communities are even more vulnerable, and we really need to take it seriously when we think about mitigating the impacts of climate change and making sure that we can stop this from happening if possible.
And can we stop it? Is it still reversible?
Look, there's a lot of impacts from climate change that unfortunately aren't reversible, but we can always make it better and we can stop it from getting worse. But what we really need to be doing is placing pressure on the big business, the big corporations, on governments to reduce our carbon emissions and to stop the overall warming of the planet. You know, we saw a global effort to reduce CFCs in our atmosphere, to reduce the rate of the ozone, hole in the ozone layer growing. And we did that. We stopped it from growing and it's shrinking. And without that, we would have had absolutely dire effects. So we've done it before in the past. We just need to do it again now. And we need to have, you know, people in positions of power that are taking it seriously and willing to take the actions that need to be taken.
If you're talking about the actions, what needs to happen to achieve the 1.5 degree increase?
1.5 degree as opposed to 2 degrees?
Yeah.
It really is a combination of everything I've said. We need to be stopping the emissions. We need to be trying to, as we've seen, you know, the planet can heal itself quite well if we just give it some space and some air to breathe. So we need to stop polluting as much as we're polluting. We need to get that warming down. It is entirely possible, but it is up to those heavy polluters. And we need to have some incentives in place, I think. You know, we do unfortunately live in a very capitalistic world that is very driven by profits. So if we can, you know, bring in some more carbon trading emission schemes, things along those lines, they've been proven to work in other parts of the world. So I think we need to do it here in Australia as well and really be setting an example.
And how is Australia doing, actually?
We're not doing too well. We're not doing too well at all, unfortunately. And, you know, we're seeing policies in Australia going backwards at the moment, which is a real shame. So hopefully future governments and future people in power take it a little bit more seriously and we can see our country and our planet conserved for future generations.
Absolutely. Yeah, let's hope so. On a totally different note, our last topic today is archaeology. New archaeological discoveries highlight lack of protections for submerged indigenous heritage. Can you tell us more about this research, please, Ray?
Absolutely. I love this research. So the Deep History of Sea Country project team, they have uncovered an intertidal stone quarry and stone tool manufacturing site, as well as coastal rock art and engravings. And this was during a land and sea archaeological survey off the Pilbara coastline in Western Australia. Now, they found evidence of a really diverse range of cultural activities across North Gippsland Island, and it includes evidence of ancient seed processing and marine resource use and lithic quarrying and production, rock art production, and a whole range of ceremonial activities as well. So it's very exciting to find this. It's not the first time that there has been underwater archaeological sites found in this specific area as well. So it just contributes to what we know about the region.
That sounds so exciting. So how old are these sites? Can we even say how old they are?
Well, dating these kind of artifacts is really challenging because they have been underwater. So the normal carbon dating processes, it's a little bit trickier to be able to do. But what we can rely on is knowing when that coastline was actually land, because we're talking about underwater sites. They weren't underwater, you know, when they were being used. They were land and the sea levels have risen. So we can date these artifacts and these sites to be at least 7,000 years old. they could be up to 100,000 years old. And you know, we have no way of knowing for sure just yet, but I'm sure as technology advances, we may be able to find that out more specifically in the future.
That sounds so interesting. But the research also sheds light on blind spots in Australia's environmental management policies, and it's placing these Indigenous heritage sites at risk. So what are these problematic policies, these areas?
Yeah, the findings of this study, it really outlines the need for a national policy which can make sure that resource companies, like mining companies, actually operate with care for Aboriginal heritage and develop protections against, you know, climate change and dredging and seabed mining, while making sure that the industry collaborates properly with Indigenous stakeholders and archaeologists as well. There is a huge blind spot in marine management in this country. Submerged archaeological landscapes, they haven't been included in the nationally coordinated studies on marine biology and shipwreck heritage. And this study will help provide like a template for state-level baseline studies to be able to extend this sort of research for these submerged landscapes more nationally. But at the moment, there aren't any protections in place for these regions because they are underwater. And you know, even the regions that we've seen on land that are culturally significant and need protections, we've seen those protections straight up ignored when it comes to these mining and resource companies. So we need to make sure that there are actually policies in place so that if there is damage done to these areas, it can actually be shown that they've done the wrong thing by damaging them in the first place.
To end up on a bit of a positive note, are there any suggestions? What should happen now? How to protect these unique, amazing sites?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, obviously, working with the local Aboriginal people in these areas is incredibly important and something that needs to be essential when coming up with policies to protect these sites. And, you know, these submerged cultural landscapes, they represent sea country, as it's known to many Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. And there is a really deep cultural and spiritual and historical connection to these underwater environments. And these surveys, they just add weight to the importance of ensuring the community can add to the story of Aboriginal people in these areas and all around Australia. And these sites, when they're uncovered, it just confirms the local people's beliefs and stories about country that have been passed on for generations. And it helps to explain where and how people lived and why they moved around. And also really interestingly in this site, the inscriptions and rock art were depicting sea animals that were right on or near the water now that would have been coastal living areas that was previously dry ground and safe for sleeping on. These areas are right now on the water's edge or underwater and non-habitable. So we're able to see what country was like back then. We just need to be making sure that Aboriginal people are in charge of the decisions made about Aboriginal land, and that includes submerged Aboriginal land as well and sea country.
My very last question is, can we see this somewhere, or is it going to be made public?
I'm not actually sure if it's going to be made public. A lot of these sites aren't really made publicly known specifically where they are, and that is to keep them protected and to keep them safe from people who may pillage or damage these sites. But you know, these were discovered using aerial photographs, among other things. So I'm certain in the future we'll be able to use something like Google Earth to be able to zoom in and admire these sites from above. I've also seen other technology like virtual reality be used so that you can do some virtual diving to see sites like this around the world. So it would be lovely to see something like that put in place so that we can visit these sites without damaging them at all and keeping them safe for the future.
One in three of our Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander bubs experience ear and hearing troubles that can make it hard for them to listen, learn, and talk to others. Hearing Australia's HAPPY program offers free, safe, and simple hearing checks for kids under six or not yet attending full-time school. Give your kids happy ears today. Call Hearing Australia on 134 432 or visit hearing.com.au today.
Want to hear more stories like this? Listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.